In this episode, I sit down and talk to Mr. Martin Stenfors, the CEO and founder of Phenium. You can click the link in the show notes to learn more about that service, but I wanted to bring another angle to this whole concept that I've been on lately about just building a strong culture within your organization. You know, whether your focus in the end is quality, productivity, customer service, safety, doesn't matter. You need to have a good, strong culture in general. And we get into, you know, what the implications might be if you don't have a strong culture. So instead of talking about workplace safety, I went on a search for industries that have this wrinkle of wider impact if you neglect your culture in your business, how the wider impact could be devastating. I thought first about maybe the healthcare industry and then thought, but most of the listeners, you're going to look at that and go, yeah, but that's kind of a given that, you know, not having a strong culture there would result in somebody dying, right? That there's a direct relationship. That's the business you're in. So then I thought, what about the food industry? So I connected with Martin. We've actually been connected for a while on LinkedIn. So we got to talking, and this is a really good example about how if you are weak, the strength of your culture is weakened, and you don't have a strong foundation, the why we exist is not there. It doesn't matter if you're focusing on workplace safety, food safety, customer service, it's all going to suffer. And in this case, it can have huge impact. I mean, you could impact entire communities. And we get into this in this episode. Before we get into today's topic, I want to remind everybody, if your business is reopening after any kind of closure due to COVID, or you've continued to remain open, but you're struggling with how to mark your facilities to ensure physical distancing and relay important information about safety and health as it relates to COVID, I want you to go visit our friends over at Mighty Line Floor Tape. Mighty Line has some great products for you to mark your floors, whether it be the stand here, the 6 feet distancing, or just floor tape to denote lanes of travel. They have everything you need to mark your facility. So hit the link in the show notes, visit our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. They are incredible partners in safety. I can't thank them enough for their support of the podcast. Again, Mighty Line Tape for all of your floor marking needs. All right. So, Martin, if you don't mind, just give us a quick rundown on your background and the unique positions that you've held and what led up to what we're going to talk about today, which obviously touches on safety culture at a high level, but what led you up to where you are today? And then tell us what that is today that you're doing.
It's a long story, but I will give you the cliff notes of it. I obviously born and raised in Sweden, hence the accent. My first startup was as soon as I had gotten my master's in engineering. I started an aviation catering company, and then I worked for some Swedish banks and such with facilities management. And I met my wife. She imported me to US. So I moved to San Francisco and started my career from the beginning again, and got into the global facilities management world. So I worked for companies like Trammell Crow, Johnson Controls, a Danish huge company called ISS. And during that career, in the beginning, I managed accounts like Agilent Technologies, Hewlett Packard, Amazon, and then some other smaller companies. And I realized that, you know, a huge part of running a facilities management organization is safety. You're in charge of so many people, and you're in charge of all the people on site. So I remember my first winter, I came to Colorado Springs to help out with the HP pre-merger compact sites for a couple of weeks, because the manager who was supposed to do the job, he had disappeared. 2 weeks turned into 4 weeks, turned into a month, or turned into 2 months. And then 2 years later, I said, I've done enough time in Colorado Springs now. But just a few weeks after coming there, we had a big snowstorm. And there were a few of the tenants in the building that slipped and fell outside and got injured. And I remember the client called me up and was really, really angry. And I, you know, all new to this in US, what we were responsible of and liability insurances and such, I realized pretty quickly that, okay, we are in charge of that as well. So safety became, you know, upfront, kind of printed on the wall in front of me that this is something I need to pay a lot of attention to, not only for my staff, you know, walking around dealing with high voltage power and such, but also, you know, the smallest little water spill on a marble floor in the corridor or something like that. So it brought me into a world that safety is very, very important. Moved back to Bay Area and then got to deal and manage HP worldwide, all their facilities worldwide. And of course, then we had all the food services, landscaping, engineering, and all that. So there you have a workplace safety and you have a food safety, and you have to combine it. And like I said before, workplace safety, horrible. You can lose people. I've unfortunately had that situation where people have passed away in accidents. But if you have somebody slipping and falling, they break an arm. If you have a disaster in the kitchen, you can poison and kill 300-400 people. So, but they're very, you know, they so belong together, the two of them. And they're very often seen as two different disciplines. But you have workplace safety in a kitchen as well, in a food safety, food service operation. And people tend to forget that, and they tend to think only on the food safety aspect. And then I worked for a large food service provider, and I was in charge of all their health and safety and food safety and quality assurance in North America. And I came there, and there were two teams. There was a food safety team. Actually, there were three teams. There was a food safety team. There was a quality assurance team. And there was an environment, health, and safety team. And it could be so that the environment, health, and safety team, the EH&S team, they went to a site, visited on Monday. Tuesday, the food safety team came in and visited. And our site manager was really confused because he was like, but you guys were here yesterday. Why are you coming again today? So it was seen as two different disciplines completely and operated as two different disciplines. And safety was sadly seen very often as a task that you have to do, you know, on Fridays between 8 and 9 a.m. and then you're done with it and not part of a culture.
Check the box.
And exactly. And I have been to places where they're at 5 o'clock, they're like, oh, shoot, we didn't do the inspections today. And then they take out the sheets and they just fill them in and falsify the name or the signature and time.
Yeah.
And it's people's lives on stake when you do things like that. And it's just non-acceptable. And also we have large corporations where executives and senior management, they talk a lot about safety, but they don't act safety. You come and visit the site and they say, oh yeah, safety is first here. And then they walk down the staircase with a briefcase in one hand and a coffee cup in the other hand and no hand on the handrail. Or they walk into the kitchen without hairnet, or they walk into the kitchen without slip-resistant shoes. So safety has to be part of the culture. So I realized that there that if you don't drive a cultural change when it comes to safety, and the resistance can be enormous, because everybody is protecting their little discipline and their area and not thinking about the big picture. So we parted ways a few years ago, and I started Fenium. And Fenium is a safety platform focusing both on food safety and environment, health, and safety. Right now, we're focusing more on food safety, partly because of COVID, because there's a huge need for safety in restaurants and such, but of course that includes customer safety as well and COVID safety. So we started a platform, an app, mobile app and a web app, and we use LoRa technology to automatically measure fridges and freeze temperatures, hot colding, and such up to 1,500 times a day. And we have a patent pending algorithm that is calculating the risks that we're facing. So instead of having the lagging situation where you're telling people that, you know what, we just found out that the food you ate was bad, so sorry, you will get stomach sick in 2 hours. We're trying to say to the restaurant owner that, you know, if you serve this food now, you will have sick customers in 2 hours, so please don't serve the food. And food safety has never really been, or safety in general, has never really been a sexy discipline per se. COVID, sadly, for the wrong reasons, put it on the chart. And we have seen an enormous uptick in the demand of what we're doing, and especially moving beyond this paper and pen, logging what has happened, but instead trying to help and prevent what is going on. So that's where we are now. And we have a company in Europe, we have a company here, a lot of clients, and we just, one of our new clients, a celebrity chef, an Iron Chef, he just sent a message a few days ago saying that, I guess this is my first testimonial, but you just saved us a boatload of money because one of our freezers went down in the middle of the night and we got one of your alerts before it happened so we could save all the food. And that's what is motivating.
Phenium is taking advantage of connected devices, Internet of Things, right? It's
exactly.
It pairs with sensors and monitors in real time, but also can help you manage some of the more mundane tasks of checking things, and so it provides a log of when things actually occurred versus when somebody says they did it, you know.
Exactly. So I mean, it's a good point, because what we thought about is that simplicity, because safety can be made so hard, so difficult, and time consuming and resource consuming, and if we don't make it simple and motivating, people won't do it. They will falsify it. We automate it so they don't have to do the time logs anymore or temp logs anymore. We do that automatically for them. And if there is something, instead of reading it 3 times a day, we read it 1,500 times a day, as I said. And we don't use, you know, modern emerging technology, LoRa technology and such, to alert you that something is going on. So it gives you peace of mind. But at the same time, you have all these, which I agree with you, they are mundane tasks, but they are very important mundane tasks.
They are, yeah.
So we call it quests. Checklist is a little bit punitive, and that's also part of what food safety and safety is very often, environment health and safety is very often punitive. You yell at people for things they have done wrong or that they have not done, instead of motivating them, telling them why they need to do it. So we then have in our mobile app, trainings and quests that we call, where we teach people how to do it. And we, instead of this is now technical, but digitizing checklist, which means that you just transform an Excel sheet into a mobile app, we digitalize them. So we make a work process out of it where you can have videos, you can have photos and all that. And it gives you a flow. So, you know, you do this. If I don't know how it's done, I don't have to run into the office and check. I just click a link and there's an instruction how it should be done. And you have it all there. To your point about doing it at the wrong time or falsifying it, our app is checking with GPS where you are when you do it, so you know that it's done in the right location at the right time. You have to sign off. You know, we had a client once that called me up and said, Martin, I have one of my employees. He did 5 reports in 10 minutes. Is that possible? I'm like, you know, let me look at this. And we looked at the back end of the system. It turned out that he sat home and he watched, you know, the Sunday football from his sofa, and he just did them. And we saw from the system that that happened. So in our training and onboarding, we explained to people that, you know, we are not here to punish you. We're here to help you. And this tool will make it much, much easier for you. And then there is a recording of it. And we use blockchain technology to secure and tamper-proof the data so nobody can go in and falsify it afterwards. you always have to deal with, you know, you can have a disgruntled employee that likes to falsify data then and there. Unless you have cameras or people in the building watching, it's impossible to get away from. But so we were actually selected as one of Silicon Valley Blockchain Society's portfolio companies because of what we're doing and how we're using blockchain technology in safety. And then also you can use it for, like you mentioned earlier when we talked, you know, incident reporting and help people understand when you work in a yogurt shop that you have the right slip-resistant shoes and you have hairnet, and if you cut something, you have cut gloves. All that is environment, health, and safety, but it's part of the whole safety family.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. You mentioned, you know, several things there. You touched on culture, and this is something as safety professionals, you know, we struggle with all the time, is, you know, making sure that we strengthen our culture, right? And it's okay to have a culture around excellence, a culture around customer service, focused on customer service or on quality. Safety supports all of that. And so you can't have a culture that is dedicated to customer service if you're injuring your workers all the time and you're not paying attention to safety. So they go hand in hand. So, and the other thing is, you mentioned, you call these quests. I've heard of folks renaming their safety audits or safety inspections, hazard hunts, you call them quests. So that it actually motivates you. It's like a quest, right? It's like almost gamifying
exactly
the whole process. So you've not just transferred a spreadsheet onto, you know, a digital version of a paper checklist, which is the same thing. You've created a process that I know you said workflow. Was that your intent? Did you set out to gamify this to make it more engaging so it was sticky?
Absolutely, yes. One of our chairman of the board is working with, she's an expert in AI technology and blockchain technology and gamification. And it was one of our, you know, pillars that we put down in the beginning that, you know, this should not be technical per se. It should be simple. It should be fashion. It should be, you know, when you go to our webpage, you shouldn't see a table with all the different, if you have gold standard or that standard that you pick, okay, I want this bronze, but I want this service as well. I mean, it's so complicated. I mean, it's not to stick out my jaw too much, but it's dumb.
No, and you're right. Then, it's frustrating when you see these services, almost these old enterprise level type, you know, brochures.
Exactly.
And the other thing you mentioned that was key right there was that you got to look at who's going to be using this stuff.
Yeah.
My daughter works in a cafe, and they have several locations. Very nice, very fancy cafe. I'll have to tell my local listeners where it is because it's fantastic. But, you know, they're all smart and capable people. That's not it. But we aren't talking about safety professionals that we're asking to do some of these.
No.
So you want to make it engaging and easy to use, simple, right? So if a safety person is creating this checklist, this log, you know, it's going to feel like that. It's not going to be fun. You're right. It's not sexy. And you're literally, it's like blinders. You're going, is this set to that? Yes. And it's you
exactly.
You miss three other things that are there that aren't on the list, but are valid, that are things you should have seen. So is that what you did? You kind of looked at like who typically is going to be doing this and how we can engage them?
Yeah, no, that's a key point because, you know, you come to restaurants or you come to operations and you look at that and it's college students that are trying to make, you know, either for their tuition or party money or whatever they need money for. So, and they have to take the food handler training. They have to do that. They have to take some basic OSHA training to be able to do it. Then you have the engineers. I have to, you know, call out and give all the food safety and workplace safety people a big shout out because they are trying hard. They're trying to make it easier, but they're so controlled by regulations. I would say one of the big challenges today are all these engineers thinking that, this is a new niche that we can work in. And they have no idea what safety is. They have never been on site. They've been to a restaurant eating. They have no clue what it's like to work there. So, of course, you need to think about who is the person who will use it. And can you gamify it so different restaurants can compete with each other and it becomes fun to do things in a timely manner and in the right manner? I went to a place in San Francisco where they make tea, and I got tea, and it was 5 o'clock just when they were about to close. And all of a sudden, the manager's like, shoot. I'm like, wow, did I do something wrong? She said, we haven't done the food safety thing today. And she took out the list and the workplace safety. She took out the list and she started to shout to everybody, do this, do this, do this, do this.
Wow.
And I'm like, aren't you supposed to do that during the day? And she said, I am perhaps, but nobody has really told us. I just started working here 2 days ago.
Wow.
And I'm like, you have to do that throughout the day. And she was like, how do you know? And I'm like, kind of my profession.
You said, well, let me tell you, this is how I know.
Exactly. Without preaching, let me tell you what's going on. So, but it was fascinating. And she...
No, that's good though. But that's good feedback you got, right? That's some validation.
It's super good. She didn't know. I mean, there was no malice. There was no bad intent from her. And then another example, I went to a client and I walked around in the kitchen and they were really proud of their operation. And there was a guy who had taken out five pieces of fish that he was filleting and fixing. And all of a sudden, the supervisor who doesn't work there anymore started to yell at him. And you cannot take that much out. You have to put it back. And, you don't have the right shoes on and you don't have your cut gloves on. What on earth are you doing? And the poor guy stood there and he said, okay. And then he took everything and he put it back. And then we walked around and I walked back and said, do you know why she yelled at you? And he's like, no, I have no idea. And I'm like, okay, so why don't we talk through this? I said, if you keep these fish fillets out for too long, they reach a certain temperature and you will have bacteria growth in them. And then you can poison customers that come into the restaurant. And in addition to that, you're standing on a slippery floor. You don't have a slip-resistant shoes on and you're handling a knife. You can slip, you can cut yourself, you can cut others. You don't have cut gloves on, which means that you can cut yourself easily. And you have antimicrobial cut gloves and things like that. So, these are for your safety and for their safety. And he was like, why hasn't anybody told me? And I'm like, first of all, some of that should have come through in the food handler training. But I know it's pushy, it's stressful and all that. And he said, I had no idea. So, and that told me, and I've seen so many of those. We can spend days talking about stories here, but there are so many of those situations where people, they mean well, they just don't know. And then you have the restaurant managers that are stressed because they need to make profit, they need to get all these things to happen. So if you don't have that culture that when you wake up or when you walk into the work or to your office or to the kitchen or to a central plant or something, and your first thing is not do I have my helmet on. It's like when you wake up in the morning and you put your glasses on or you put your watch on. You do that because it has become a habit and it's part of your daily kind of culture. If you have the same setting when you work with safety, you shouldn't have to question, do I have this or have I done this? It comes automatically because it's part of the culture. And there's no screaming and yelling at people because it's who we are and what we do for a living.
You mentioned the food handler safety training, and I remember going through that. And I remember all our workers had to go through that as part of the health code,
yeah,
the local health ordinance. The intent, I get the intent and it's spot on.
Yeah.
But it has become just this, you have to do this before you can do this thing that you're really here to do.
Yeah.
And it becomes, like you said, a check mark. Exactly. You check the box.
Yeah.
I got my certificate. I sat there, let the video run, and I answered enough questions to barely pass or whatever. And I got my little card. So you said there's video, like, okay, so not getting into, I'm curious about But and by the way, I think the viewers and listeners, what obviously the video is going to be on the community site. The audio will be out there for everybody in podcast land. But there is no affiliation here between us. No. We found each other on the internet, like everything. We're connected on LinkedIn. And I thought it was a unique way of explaining how important safety is to folks that normally don't have to think outside their four walls, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking offline how normally if I screw something up on this machine or I miss a checklist, is maybe I produce a bad widget and we get a customer complaint, they return it and get another one. And what was it you said to me about one meal away? What was that?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it sounds harsh, but if you have workplace safety and food safety, workplace safety, yes, you can have fatalities and such. And in a office environment, kitchen environment, people can cut the fingertip off. And it's horrendous. It's horrible. Nobody should come back from work with an injury or come back in worse health than when they came there. But when you look at food safety, you make one slip up there and you're one meal away from a complete disaster.
And it's happened.
It's happened. I mean, look at Chipotle. Look at, you know, was it Jack in the Box? And look at them. And then we had some peanut butter companies where they did it deliberately. I mean, it has huge ramifications if you don't pay attention to this. And you don't want to be connected with kind of that, like we were the ones that poisoned 500 people. It has enormous costs, both for you brand-wise, reputation-wise, trust-wise, also for workers. Do they really want to work there? Because are they taken care of properly by the employee? So it can have, people don't think about it. I went to a restaurant in San Francisco for Valentine's Day, and the guy who was there, we sat by the bar, he was mixing béarnaise sauce, and all of a sudden, he took the spoon and put it in his mouth, and then he put the spoon back in the sauce. And I'm like, no, not eating that. And then I told the owner, and then he was reprimanded and apologized and all that. And then a little bit later, all of a sudden, I see him doing this. And then he continues cooking. And I'm like, you know what? We're done. We're out of here.
Yeah,
I'm not eating here anymore. I mean, and so I learned. I worked for a British company. I worked in London for a couple of years, and there was a man who taught me quite a bit about food safety. His name is Simon Titchener. He told me once that, you know, he never goes in and eats in the restaurant unless he gets to look into the kitchen. So he says whenever he goes to a restaurant, he asks them if he can take a peek into the kitchen. He doesn't need to go in because he doesn't have hairnet or anything like that, and he can bring in things from outside, and he doesn't have slip-resistant shoes. But if he can just take a peek into the kitchen, and if he can do that, it's fine. But he said, if they say no, don't eat there. Because then they have something to hide, and you don't want to eat there.
So back in my early days of my career, when I was with the fire department, we would do inspections sometimes of some of the businesses in our community.
Yeah.
And we always used to joke, you always want to go where the firefighters eat because they've seen the kitchen.
Exactly.
we've been in the back. I was shocked at what I found and some of those. The other thing I started to do, and I learned this with our franchise, just frozen yogurt. There was not with the franchise we were affiliated with, but a different chain. And on the East Coast, there was a Listeria outbreak with the dairy, right?
Yeah.
From not cleaning the parts that were attached to the machines properly. And it made a lot of people very sick. And so the other thing I coupled that with is if you can go into a bathroom and they can't clean a bathroom, what do you think they're doing in the kitchen?
Yeah.
And you're right. They're college kids, they're younger workers, but that is, if you think about it, it's such an opportunity for us, not just in our industry, but in our working culture in this country and others, to start when they're young, to say, this isn't just a job. You know what you're doing here, right? You are actually making the world better in some way
yeah.
for other people, whether it's a widget that person needs to finish restoring an antique piece that their grandfather left them, or you're making a meal for somebody who's coming out to celebrate. They just passed their medical exam or the bar exam, or they just graduated. I know it's just food to some people, but I know it sounds silly. I'm talking like I don't want people to roll their eyes, but if we could instill in the young workers that work, it's not just a job. What you're doing is there's a market need for this and people value it. And you can put your best into it.
Absolutely. And not to kill this with stats and facts. I mean, our goal, our moonshot is to reduce global foodborne illness with 50%.
Oh, great.
In the next 10 years. Nobody has told me so far that it is impossible. Nobody has proven to me that it is impossible. Can I do it on my own with Michael and the team members? No. We need a community. We need a platform to be able to do it. But when it comes to what you said, is what happens too many times is that there is complacency when it comes to safety. You think you have been there, you have seen it, you have done it. If you look at stats, 70% of all foodborne illnesses that are recorded in hospitals around the world come from the restaurant industry. So 19 people get sick every second from a foodborne illness.
Really?
4 people die every minute from a foodborne illness worldwide.
Wow.
We're not talking about refugee camps in Syria or anything like that. We're talking in the modern world that has been developed in a fashion that we know that we have restaurants and such and luxuries that we have access to.
And has standards.
As has standards, exactly, standards to follow. Yeah. And so despite having those regulations, we still have that. And sadly, it's growing as well. The numbers are growing. And it's way too many people. It's way too, I cannot remember the cost. I think it cost the society $1.3 trillion every year. And keep in mind, these are only the people that report a foodborne illness to the hospital. How many of us have not gotten food poisoned or a foodborne illness when you have been to a restaurant and you have not gone to the hospital? You have stayed home and thrown up or whatever you do, and a day later you're doing fine again. You don't report it. So we only see the surface of this. So it's a huge problem. But then you have, like you said, you have a workforce out there that don't take it as a culture. You have a management workforce out there that is focusing on profit. And they take shortcuts to increase the sales or to get food out faster. And there is a lot of complacency. There are people that have been in kitchens for 30, 40 years. Some are, of course, fantastic at what they're doing, and they're focusing really, really hard on it. I was out in Philadelphia a few weeks ago and visited a couple of restaurants, some of the best safety performance that I've seen in restaurants in a long, long time. And it was top of their mind. There were no signs reminding people everywhere that you have to do this, you have to do that. It was, everybody was like, but you know, that's what we have been employed to do. So it was part of, it was not, no, I'm cutting chicken fillets or I'm cutting bacon. It was like, no, I work in a kitchen. I have to, you know, attend to all this. But, and then you have the younger workforce that has not been stooped already into this. And that's where we have opportunity. Because those are the ones that we can train. They don't want to do a bad job. They, when you look at research and studies, if you ask the younger generation what is motivating them, it's not getting, 50 cents more per hour. It's getting recognized. It's getting rewarded in one way or another for having done something good, getting their name on a chart or being mentioned openly to everybody that you have done a fantastic job. And that's what we are promoting through Fenium. So instead of focusing on what is going wrong, we're focusing on what has gone well. So in the new version that is coming out here shortly, you can actually comment on a colleague that did something well. You can give them a thumbs up, and it's shared with management and everybody else that, hey, John did something really well.
That's good.
And I think we need that. We need to move away from the negativity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's huge, because like I just read the Department of Labor published these numbers that, like, was it 4.5 million workers quit their jobs in the last, since the beginning of the year, almost exclusively in the service industry, restaurants, food, and hotels. So, I mean, if they're not short-staffed, they're going to be. So anytime we can make it easy for them to still maintain compliance, but also they're going to have to be more competitive in attracting the limited pool of available candidates that they might have access to. And the other thing that you reminded me of was, like, there's a huge opportunity with the young workers. And OSHA, by the way, has a young workers page that talks about the hazards that young workers typically are exposed to, and mostly in food service industry. But we have an opportunity to ingrain this culture in them, because who are young workers going to be in the future? They're going to be our business leaders in the future. And so that's not the time to start. You start now.
No. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the challenge. I mean, I've seen that with clients in my previous positions, where you have a CEO or a segment leader, something talks, you know, gather their team of 100 to 2,000 people and talk about safety. And then they don't pay attention to it themselves. And if they don't pay attention to it, it gives me an excuse for not doing it, because, you know, my boss's boss is not doing it.
Yeah. So they say the right things, but that's what we're supposed to say. And now we can actually go on with our work.
Exactly. So you have to take that responsibility. And it's the same with, so we, perhaps a little bit of a sidetrack here, but what we do with this as well is that we then reduce food waste, and we reduce, the injuries that happen in the kitchen, because people know what's going on. They don't have to take risks when they move into a walk-in freezer where the floor is overfrozen, and they don't have to throw away $30,000-$40,000 worth of food. I read every day that in US we throw away 40%, 35-40% of all the food that we buy from stores, and the restaurant buys as well into there.
Really?
Thirty-five to forty percent of all the food we buy is thrown away.
That's incredible.
And I don't want to be the preacher saying that here we have all the poor people that cannot afford it and we should be, but it is, there is something wrong when we throw away. I mean, even if we had thrown 10-15% of food away that we buy,
even if you're, it's still even wrong. If you're not even thinking about that wasted food source, you know, and the energy it took to bring that to the table, or, well, it didn't even make it to the table, but, you know, to bring it to the restaurant, even if you're not thinking about that, that's 40% cost, 30 to that, exactly, of food cost. And you know this better than I do. I mean, I only did a couple of frozen yogurt franchises years ago, but the profit margins, the margins in the restaurant industry are pretty thin.
Yeah.
And cost is one of the reasons.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have one client who has incentivized the staff that they look at how much food they buy, they look at how much food they serve, and then the difference there is considered food loss.
Yeah.
And the lower you can get that number, the higher bonus you get every month.
Wow. Wow.
Which
incredible.
Is really cool, because I think that, plus that, you know, if you look at the Drawdown Project latest research, the top three remedies for slowing down the climate change is reducing the refrigeration, the leakage and all that, the refrigeration, and reducing food waste. So if we can address those, which we are trying to do, and trying to get our network and customers and clients and partners to do, we have done something incredible. And I, you know this as well, we talked about it earlier, you know, as long as you don't have to make that call to a parent or to somebody saying that your son or daughter or wife or husband is in hospital because they got injured at work today because we didn't pay enough attention to safety, or it, you know, if you can, if we in our endeavor having done this, if we save one life, it was so worth us working with Fenu.
Yeah. Yeah, we think the same way in safety. Oftentimes you never know. And some of the best feeling in the world as a safety professional is when a former employee that used to work with you, they've moved on or you've moved on, but they reach out to you on LinkedIn or via text, or you see them and they share a story of, you know, I didn't think it was a big deal at the time, but you know, that training you did, or, you know, that thing you said to me, it almost happened and I was able to see it and I was able to stop it. And, you know, that's how you know, okay, then it's worth it. That one story, that was worth it for me, you know? That's great.
And that is, you know, we in our web app, we also track near incidents and we reward near incidents. So because if you report, people are scared of reporting something because they think they made a mistake. But if you report that you slipped on a carpet in the kitchen or something like that, then you have prevented somebody else from actually getting injured, and you have done something good, and that deserves a reward or recognition.
I used to joke with people. This was years ago. I don't find it as often anymore, but you're right. It's still out there. Their apprehension to reporting a near miss. I mentioned to somebody who got a minor laceration, and they were working in a manufacturing process. And I said, wait, let's stop. You know, what part of the process were you at when this happened, and which tools? And they were like, man, you mean I got to report when I get like a minor cut? And I said, look, we can do this now, or I can let you go back to work and you call me when your finger is gone or you need stitches, or I don't know. We don't know how severe it'll be, but when it gets serious enough, then we'll fix the process. So we could do it now or we can do it then. And they looked at me and I said, that's a near miss. It's a free opportunity. Nobody had to suffer, but we learned something about our process or about our layout or about our floors or our rugs or our carpets. Maybe they need to be changed by the service provider twice a week instead of once a week because they start to curl and we don't catch it. But you almost tripped, so you saved us. So that we got to change the way we think. And that's why I loved how you kind of gamify this and you make it a positive thing, because that's what it should be. Learning is a positive.
Yeah, but one of my former employees, he moved on and became the head of safety for a large tire company in North America, and is one of these young guys, or he was young when I met him 10 years ago, a little bit older today, but phenomenal safety mind. And he always told me, he said, Martin, what I'm focusing on is, instead of thinking about incident intervention, I'm thinking about incident prevention. That's my whole day. And if we can prevent one thing by learning from another thing, that's, we have done something good. And that, I think that's the thinking one needs to have, because that small laceration could have been big, and if you don't do something about it, the next one may be fatal. You never know. And like you said before, you have to take the action, but you never know if you saved a life, because it may not happen again, ever. But
which
you have
good.
At least you have taken an action to prevent it. And I stick out my jaw again and say that every single accident is preventable. It's just where do you start preventing it?
If you accept one, it makes it easier to accept others. It's a slippery slope. And that's how we get into trouble. One of them we have to learn from. And I think you're right. I think that it's the difference between lagging indicators and leading indicators. But then there's a third category, and that is predictive indicators.
Like, exactly.
If we can predict outcomes, not just early warning signs, like, oh, this thing is happening and I can now intervene. That's like an and-on. That's like you're just catching something right before it's about to happen. How do we anticipate that thing and not even get to that point? That's predictive, right? So I love that you're focusing on that. I love that, you know, you're coupling. It's not just an app. It's not just a digital checklist that looks slick, that you're connecting with sensors and devices in real time that can send those alerts, but also you're gamifying, you're giving people an opportunity to recognize others. That's exactly what we would expect in a program, even a paper program. And you've got it down to software, a phone, right? Phone, tablet, yep. Laptop, desktop. Yep. That's great.
All the mobile devices and computers. And we are not a hardware company, so you can use any mobile device. You don't have to buy, you know, our special tools. You don't have to buy our handhelds. You don't have to buy anything like that. We have found a few partners, gone through a lot of different companies around the world to find the best technology. And we're constantly reviewing and updating and partnering with new ones. And there are no upfront fees because it has to be, you know, simple pricing, no surprises. So it's a software as a service. You pay a monthly fee. There's no, you know, yes, you know, to use us, you have to pay $150,000 upfront or you have to buy this and that. It's a monthly fee and that's it. And that makes it same thing there. If we make safety simple, workplace or food safety simple, we also have to make the pricing simple. So it's easy to get, easy to just, you know, doesn't have to be special budget meetings and, you know, looking at all that to figure out who can we afford this, because then we have not succeeded in reducing the number of incidents in the world.
Awesome. That's great. So where can folks go to learn more about this service?
So right now, the best way to contact us is on our webpage, www.phenium.com. So Phenium, which is a combination of phenomenal and premium.
There you go.
Became Phenium. And then you find email addresses and phone numbers there. We are updating all that. We're right in the midst of launching a completely new UX design, so user experience design of our tool. We have about 15-20 people around the world working on it, and we are also launching a new website here shortly. So, but that's where you can get hold of myself and Michael Potter, who is in charge of sales, and looking forward to hearing from people. Any way we can help, we would love to.
Oh, absolutely. I'm happy to. And again, I want to be clear with my listeners. There is no affiliation here with you. This is not a paid promo or anything. It's just this topic is so unique to us as safety professionals that I wanted to talk to somebody who has that extra wrinkle in just not just workplace safety, but poor safety and quality leaving the facility can do some serious harm. And I wanted us to kind of start seeing workplace safety through that lens. And so that's great. I'll have links to your website in the show notes, so anybody listening will be able to click on that. And Martin, I can't thank you enough for taking time to talk with us about, you know, building a strong culture of safety, and especially with the younger workers, thinking ahead, thinking outside the box from old traditional ways of doing this stuff, and really thinking about the end users, these young workers in these restaurants and these food service industries that have to do these things, and how we can simplify it for them. So that's incredible.
No, thanks for having us. It's I love what you're doing. It needs to get out there. We had, when COVID started, we did round tables with health authorities and the restaurant associations and stuff like that to get the word out, because there is a lot of old-fashioned compliant ways of doing things, and we need to change. If we cannot just keep on creating new regulations and think that will fix the problems we have. We need to be smart about this.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Thanks once again, Martin. I will have links to your LinkedIn bio as well, so that folks want to reach out to you on LinkedIn, they can. But
thank you.
To learn more about Martin and that awesome software they got going over there, click the link in the show notes. And maybe we'll connect again soon and talk about something else that's on your mind.
Absolutely.
All right, there you have it, my conversation with Martin Stenfors. And again, I cannot emphasize this enough. I just want to be upfront and honest with all the listeners here so that you know, appreciate where I'm coming from. There is no affiliation whatsoever between Phenium and myself, period, full stop. But I thought it was an interesting way, as I said in the beginning, an interesting way to just continue to drive this point about it's the culture. It's just your overall culture in within the organization. It's whether or not we are disciplined in our work in general. And I've used some examples. Martin used some examples in this episode. If I go into a restaurant and I look in the bathroom and the bathroom's filthy, they can't even clean a bathroom. What do you think they're doing with like all the serious stuff in the back? What's their ability to stay on top of that? And same thing in your workplace. We can't even get people to wear safety glasses all the time, and we're expecting them to take all this other stuff seriously. Look for those weak signals. Look for areas where you are weak, okay, in your culture, and then start asking why. Why is that? And because it's going to have that ripple effect. So look, it's an interesting concept. I'm always challenging myself to think of new and unique ways to bring some of these older, you know, recurring topics to you. So let me know what you think. The video interview is on the Safety Pro Podcast Community membership site. So premium members get to see the video interview in all of its HD glory with myself and Martin. But obviously, for the rest of you, think about becoming a member of that community. We're always getting into the mix with these conversations over there on the community. It's a great place. I'm really enjoying, you know, how we've been building this community this year. It's still young as of the time of this recording. It's still a young community, but it's growing. Every week we get new members. So I look forward to you joining us if you haven't already. Otherwise, I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast.